Mini episode 374 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 374. You've got FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Kyle Ross breaking down one of my favorite topics of the entire year. Championship Sunday is upon us this week. We will be previewing it on the show. Looking at last week with the picks in the divisional round, I went 1-2-1 due to some unfortunate backdoors here. A push in the Seattle game with the line that I had, and then San Diego getting under the wire in very shameful fashion. During what would have been a good weekend, and like I said, 1-2-1, I did not make any recommended picks for the weekend. My plays for the year, 124, 129, and 9 on all games, 24, 27, and 1 on my big three, 9, 8, and 1 on my locks, which I have a very cowardly fashion here. I refuse to give out the rest of the year so as to stay profitable. A better week for you, Kyle, than I had in negative territory here, albeit 1-1 with the aforementioned shameful San Diego backdoor push.
You know, I may have been 1-1 overall with my picks last week, but I really feel that as far as breaking the games down, I was a perfect 4-0 last week. I was that good, you know. In your world, I think they say I would get a Buckeye.
Yeah, on your helmet, yes.
Yes, I would get a Buckeye. Now, not from your boy Jason Jones, I know, who took some serious umbrage with my boasting of San Diego, a very undeserved cover, but a cover nonetheless, as you so eloquently put it there at the top of the show. They did not win the game straight up, like I indicated could very well happen, but... I don't know if I'm just hijacking things from you here at the Open, but whatever, I'll make this left turn here on you.
Go ahead.
Looking at the games last week, because I did want to take a moment to look back at the four games last week, they really, for the first time in a long time in the division round, there was no huge surprise, and as we're about to get to, that has left us with what I believe, and I think you'll concur, is the finest Final Four we've had in our lifetime.
Yeah.
For the conference championship. I didn't spend a ton of time going back, to the 80s to think about it, but when I went back to the 90s in the current playoff format, I'd be hard-pressed if you could name one better than what we have this week. But with me calling for San Diego to win that game outright last week, and obviously they did have it for a glimmer, it looked like they were going to do it. They'd cut it to 24-17. They kicked away. They had Denver third and long. They had the breakdown in coverage, and that was that. But there had been a pattern ever since 2004 of one shocking upset every year in the divisional round. And you had even gone so far to post, if we can peel the curtain back a little bit here, Ricky.
Sure.
You had posted in a little discussion we were having amongst friends that going into that Denver-San Diego game, this was obviously after the 49ers-Panthers result was really no longer in doubt, that if you were the Broncos, you'd be terrified because that big upset obviously hadn't happened yet during the weekend. And just so people are clear on this, I looked it up because it's kind of what I used as the basis for me kind of, you know, indicating the Chargers might win the game outright last week. Check this out. Since 2004, and now, of course, I clicked off of it and can't see it, but where is it here? This is kind of embarrassing, isn't it? Okay, here we go. 05 Steelers beat Indy as 9.5-point dogs. 06 Pats over San Diego, 4.5-point dogs. 07 Chargers over Indy, 11-point dogs. 08 Cards over Carolina, 10-point dogs. 09 Jets over San Diego, 8.5-point dogs. 2010 Jets in New England, 9-point dogs. The Giants in Green Bay, 8.5-point dogs. And then last year, of course, you had the Ravens shocking Denver. But as a little, you know, kind of peek ahead to where the direction I'm going with my picks this week, I told this to you off air, I should have been maybe a little more trepidatious calling for an upset last week. because it was shocking, at least to me, how the majority of bets going into the games last week were on the underdog. They were all on the road teams. Now, the 49ers were favored, but in the other three games, the majority of the bets were coming in on the road underdog. And you don't see that very often. I always tell you, the only underdog I really don't like is a publicly backed underdog. Now, we have two of them this week, which is very interesting.
Right.
But we also have the four best teams in the league this week, and, you know, two teams that are unaccustomed to being underdogs, those being the 49ers and Patriots. So, you know, that's kind of what, you know, where I was thinking just to defend. You know, I'll take the cover with San Diego, although I thought it could have been a little bit better going in. But, you know, here we are, Ricky, the finest Final Four I think we've ever had.
It's amazing. And, again, what you said is true from a handicapping perspective of there's always a team that gets through, and that's looking at the technical side of it. For me, looking at the fanboy side of it and being a football romantic, it's a thing of all things being equal, I would rather see the best teams play. I don't much like Denver or New England, but they're not the squealers. They're not Baltimore. I don't have to root against them to that point. It's a thing where I want to see the best four teams playing, and it never happens. You were right about what I posted on Facebook there going into the Denver game. I'd be terrified because it would be so San Diego of them to pull that upset. You know, they did it
sure.
in the 90s. They made it against the Steelers, and that was the year that they actually upset the Steelers and made it to the Super Bowl. And because they did it to the Steelers, I don't remember being very upset about it. But my point is, it always happens. We never get this, and I've alluded to this previously on the show, that Super Bowl Sunday, oh, I love it. You love it. It's one of the greatest days of the year. But it's a day for the casuals and the mouth breathers and somebody going to their office Super Bowl party and, you know, people who don't know crap about football who are there. This is more pure. This is, if you love football, Championship Sunday, it's two games with a Super Bowl berth on the line. I've loved it for a long time. Always have a get-together at my place. Can't wait for that on Sunday. And, again, I won't be able to invite you. I understand that you and the little lady are going to be out in Vegas watching it. So enjoy that. One of the guys in the FBH Lounge family here in the 21st Century Media Alliance, Platinum Smalls, was ragging on you a little bit when I told him about that. He said, how does he deserve going to Vegas after picking San Diego straight up last week in Cincinnati to go to the AFC Championship game?
I could say nine things right, and this Platinum Smalls would pick the other one out as far as I'm concerned. You know, typical clients in the handicapping world, okay? You know, you give the guy 95% gold, he'll, of course, harp on the 5% manure. Come on. Yes, I said they had a chance to win the game straight up, but I cashed my bet, everybody. Okay, where are you at, Jason Jones and Raymond Smalley? I'm calling out everybody in the 21st Century Media Alliance today. I'm shooting.
Well, you know,
I'm shooting this week, Ricky.
Look at me getting out the oar and just stirring the waters here, getting all fired up.
You know how fired up I get over that stuff.
Well, we both have thoughts and observations and statistics relating to both games here. I'm going to give you one on the overall of Championship Sunday before we get into it. I told you off air I had what would probably be the nerdiest Championship Game Sunday statistic anybody could find anywhere. This is the fifth time In the history of Championship Sunday, so going back to the AFL-NFL merger of 1970, and I want to stipulate this regards specific stadiums, not cities, because every team since the merger has changed stadiums, in some cases maybe even more than once, but it's specific stadiums. It's the fifth time that we have two teams hosting in the same stadiums as they did previously. The previous time that these two games were at the one-time Invesco Field and whatever they've called Seattle Stadium over the years, 2006, you may remember. It's actually the last time both of these teams were playing in the championship games. Denver with the very shocking fold-up against the Pittsburgh Steelers as Jake Plummer couldn't get it done. And Seattle bested Carolina only to get screwed in the Super Bowl by the officiating. So 2006 and 2014.
Oh, boy, that again.
Yes. So
that again.
To,
by the way, can I cut you off for 1 second here?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. What a horrible Final Four that was. Jake Plummer, Matt Hasselbeck, Jake Delhomme.
Kind of makes our point. Yeah.
Yeah. It
makes our point, Kyle.
Final four.
That's what we usually get. We usually get at least one game like that. And I remember saying when San Francisco won, like, okay, at least the nightcap's going to be Seattle-San Francisco. Now, as a good wrestling aficionado, I like a build to the main event. And the last couple of years, we've a lot of times had the second game that's been more anticlimactic than the first. Maybe not last year. I think we would all agree New England-Baltimore was more compelling than San Francisco-Atlanta. It kind of goes back. The previous year, New England and Baltimore was probably also more compelling than the 49ers and the Giants. So, you know, you like to have an excellent game last, but this is a bona fide double main event.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, with all this history, this show's becoming rather Berman-esque, if I do say. But
yes.
I have one for you, too. Speaking of the aforementioned Swami, he referenced when the four teams had all advanced that this is the first time since 98 that the four conference finalists all won 12 or more games during the regular season. So it kind of plays into just how strong this field is and how tough these games are to pick. By the way, I have no confidence either of my picks this week. But so I looked up 1998 to see who those four conference finalists were.
Yeah.
And, again, this one's just stronger. You did have the defending Super Bowl champion Denver Broncos, who would then go on to repeat John Elway's final year. They had Terrell Davis. Obviously, that was a very strong team. But they played a Jets team that – I don't know how they were as good as they were with Vinny Testaverde at quarterback. I think that was Belichick's last year on the Jets staff under Parcells.
Okay, I thought you meant head coach. Yeah, Parcells was the head coach. I think you're right. He was the D coordinator. You're right.
Yeah, I think so. But, all right, so you obviously had a very strong coaching tree there. But, you know, that Jets team certainly didn't have any staying power. On the NFC side, I remember, you had what I consider to be one of the – you know, I guess until recent times, I remember the Packers a couple years ago with Aaron Rodgers, and they got upset by the Giants, could make finally claim this. But at the time, what I thought was the best team not to ever make the Super Bowl, that being that Vikings team, it was Randy Moss's rookie year. They set all those scoring records with Brian Bilka's offensive coordinator. They lost to what I still to this day consider a fluky Atlanta Falcons team. I know that team won like 14 games during the regular season. That was the Dirty Bird year with Jamal
Dirty
Anderson.
Dirty Bird!
But like the next year, they were no good. These are teams, you know, obviously on the AFC side, you have the two quarterbacks that have dominated the conference for the last decade. Manning, obviously, having done so also with Indianapolis. And then on the NFC side, you know, this has kind of been building Seattle and San Francisco now ever since last year. You know, these two teams, if I remember, if we rewind all the way back to the beginning of the year, I think you and I both had these teams 1-2 in our initial power rankings to start the year. So this has been building. So there's no flukes here. This is just – these are easily, to me, the four best teams. New England sometime kind of fluctuated out of that spot. You know, New Orleans and Carolina, who lost last week, they bear mention. They were kind of playing, I thought, to the same level as New England much of the year. New England is, I believe, clearly the weakest of the four remaining teams. You know, I think there's, without question, you know, to beat a dead horse, this is the strongest Final Four we've had, you know, in my life. But I can't remember one. I mean, even when I was in high school, Ricky, I know you're a little older than me, Ricky, but, you know, when I was in high school and middle school and in the 90s, the AFC game was always kind of weak. The NFC game was always great, those 49ers-Cowboys games. But the AFC teams were always kind of like, that way it was a much weaker conference. You had the Bills, you know, beating, you know, kind of some bum team every year. So if you know a stronger Final Four in our lifetime, I challenge you to bring it to my attention right now.
I think you'd probably have to go back to the 70s, and that's before, you know, either A, before you were born, and B, before I could remember as far as any of the ones in the early to mid-70s. Quick follow-up note on 98. I will tell you this. My longtime friend, FDH football analyst Bob Denick, to this day bitter, because he's the same way I am, a football romantic, wants to see the best of the best, assuming that there's no personal hatreds involved. To this day, he's upset that Atlanta beat Minnesota, because that Denver-Minnesota Super Bowl could have been so epic. And the way that the Fox jinxed, I think it was Morton Anderson. Did they put up the graphic about he hasn't missed a field goal all year and then he whips it? So
was it Morton or was it Gary? Was it Morton or Gary? It was one of the
Andersons. Oh, I I think it was Morton, but I could be wrong. Okay. And Gary might have been with the Vikings the same year, if I remember. That's a very good question. We'll find out after the fact, and or somebody will probably light us up here for not knowing that. But, when you look back at history again, it's a beautiful thing because it just shows you to you know how much you should appreciate what we have this year and that, you know what, it's not going to come our way again anytime soon because the odds are some unworthy team is going to fluke in there next year and screw up one of these games. But for now, yeah, it's, you know, the best – one-on-one rivalry in sports with Manning and Brady, and something that I'll have to look this up, but it's approaching the longest-lasting one in sports history. I'll have to look and see how long, like, Chamberlain and Russell went, but, I mean, we're getting to that point. It's longer than Bird and Magic already, just about. It's right about in a tie, but Magic and Bird weren't even playing meaningful games at the end. They last played in a championship series in 1987. They came into the league in 79, so... This is one of the longest one-on-one rivalries, big ones in sports history, and the other one, the best rivalry in the NFL now. And again, a little bit of I told you so, every NFL analyst we've had on the show over the course of the last 6 months, from Ian Eagle to Lex Luger to a lot of the other folks, Bob Glauber, they've all agreed with me, Seattle-San Francisco will be the rivalry of the decade at the end of this decade. And we're on our way with that one, and as that is the nightcap, that's the second one we'll be talking about. But we open with Denver hosting New England, of course, this weekend in a game where the line is 5.5. It opened at 6. So much history here. Again, everybody's talking up the quarterback angle, but there's also the coaches. Let's not sleep on that because one way or another, Don Shula is getting tied this weekend by one of these two coaches. He's either going to get tied by Bill Belichick for 6 Super Bowl appearances as a head coach or John Fox will join the list, and it also includes coaches like Mike Holmgren and Dan Reeves and some other guys who have coached 2 separate teams to the Super Bowl. Don Shula was the first to do it. John Fox may join that list. And by the way, who punked John Fox in the Super Bowl 10 years ago in the Janet Jackson Super Bowl? Bill Belichick. So there is history between them as well as the quarterbacks. I think everybody's sleeping on that angle because John Fox is a very underrated coach. Having said that, I think most people would line him up as 4th out of these 4 this weekend, and I think fairly so when you look at their track records be his. It doesn't make him a bad coach by any stretch of the imagination, but we have 3 super elite coaches based on what their track records are. So you give New England the check mark there, Brady v. Manning. Again, we talked about this off air. It's not the pure Marino versus Montana comparison that people once thought because Manning has won a Super Bowl and Brady has had mega regular season statistics in the second half of his career. So it's not there's a little bit of crossbreeding there. But again, one for the history books. If, believe it or not, if Manning wins this one, he's 2 out of 3 against Brady in AFC championship games. And the conventional wisdom is it's Brady in the postseason, Manning in the regular season. That may give Manning the nod in most people's heads. This is one of the most impactful, certainly non-Super Bowl games, but maybe impactful legacy games in NFL history.
Yeah, and another bit of interesting trivia is this is the 4th New England-Denver playoff game, first, obviously, with Peyton Manning on the Denver side. The home team has won all 3.
Ooh, okay.
So there you go. Now, a couple things I wanted to go over as far as kind of present.
Oh, by the
day.
Way, side note, Kyle, on that. Side note, we talked about 2005, the Plummer team. You remember the shocker of it? That was the game where Denver stopped New England from the three-peat. That's the most memorable game, I think, that most of us remember. It was a Saturday night game.
Yes, that was actually Brady's first ever playoff loss. As he had started 10-0. And let's be honest here, we talked about it since kind of that, you know, since he lost that first one, you know, he's kind of in a 50-50 proposition in the postseason, Tom Brady. You look at that record against Peyton Manning all time. I believe it's 10-4 straight up, 8-5-1 against the number. In my opinion, not reflective of the two quarterbacks. And Tom Brady is not significantly better than Peyton Manning. That record is indicative of the fact that Brady traditionally, when Manning was with Indianapolis, had better teams. He had a better supporting cast, something that I do not think is the case this Sunday. Now, I want to talk about the line for a second here in this game because it's bounced down and it's coming back up.
opened at 6.5. It actually dropped at 4.5. All the early money came on New England. It went to 4.5. A lot of the same people and a lot of the people who were waiting for it to drop, and that like Denver, bought it at 4.5. It's now coming back up to 5.5. I'm really interested to see where this line goes. Right now, if you're thinking, if you haven't played the game yet, I'm not sure what I would recommend to do if I were you. I know where I locked my bet in at. I'm still going to recommend the side, obviously, here. But, you know, if you liked New England, you might have missed your chance to get the best available line. Same with Denver. So it's a bit unique there. We need to talk about the regular season meeting. You referenced it a little bit earlier and how you can't draw much from it. I agree. It was one of the flukiest games I've ever seen. It was a Sunday night game, as you remember, Ricky, and I think most people do.
Mm-hmm.
New England turned it over 3 times on their first 3 drives. Denver converted all of them into points. They went to halftime 24-0. Denver then, in the second half, turned it over 3 times. New England converted them all into points. We went to overtime. Welker muffed the fumble, the deciding 7th turnover, and the Patriots had the improbable overtime outright win. They were a home dog in that game, which is kind of crazy, to be honest with you.
Right. That's how high-riding Denver was at that point in time. And, it's so hard to draw anything from it. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, here's what I know. Both defenses are weaker than they were in that first matchup.
Yes.
Denver is missing half of its starters in the front 7. New England has just been throwing just guys off the scrap heap into the starting lineup all year long. And I think both teams are going to be able to move the ball. And ultimately, I think that's going to favor the Broncos at home. Don't love it, but I'm going to recommend it. Take Denver here. I went against both these teams last week. I'll give you a chance to respond. I know I went against both these teams last week, but I thought both results were a little misleading. Rick Morris, your response.
Okay. Well, before I do, I'm going to set up as I did last week. And, again, this might be a waste of breath here on the first part of this because, again, throw a lot of the statistics out the window because of the injuries on defense. But for what it's worth, it at least shows you offensively what they're capable of doing against the defensive numbers here. Patriots rushing the game, 129.1 yards per game. The Broncos, 101.6 yards per game given up on the ground. So on paper, that's very respectable compared to the reputations of these defenses, albeit, like you said, Denver's defense is a lot weaker than they were for most of the season. Denver running the ball, 117.1 yards per game. Patriots giving up 134.1. So that's going to be even worse. That's a sucky number, and it's going to be even worse. You look at the passing, 255.4 yards per game by the Patriots through the air. Amazingly, 254.4 yielded by the Broncos. If they can hold Brady did 254.4. I think they'll take it, but I don't see that happening. You've got Denver, of course, 340.3 yards per game passing. Just unbelievable versus 239.0 yards yielded by the Patriots in the air. And looking at this here, I told you off air, I have the same sense looking at this one here. I was at the game of the century, OSU-Michigan 06, the 42-39 game. And What was really, really great for a football nerd like me, I actually had the all-22 view. My dad's season tickets that year were right in the middle between the goalposts and the end zone. So I just loved it. It was amazing. I mean, you have to be a real nerd, football nerd like maybe either one of us to really appreciate that. But the view and what you could just discern was awesome. And what I discerned, what a lot of people probably did was, that's the ultimate game that comes to mind, in my mind, of neither team could stop the run or the pass. Because I remember a lot of people were like, how come both defenses suck so much? And I was like, that's very, very simplistic. Because for either team on that day, cheat against the run, they'll kill you with the pass. Cheat against the pass, they'll kill you with the run. We've seen it with Denver all year long. No Sean Moreno, what he has done in the running game. We've seen it much more recently with New England, with LeGarrette Blount, with the renewed trust that they have in Stephen Ridley. And, again, in looking at this here, I just keep coming back to, I hear everything you're saying, but 5.5 just seems like a lot to me, because I could see New England getting under that more than the other game. See, this is one where I can kind of cheat and hedge on who I think is going to win. I'm going to say I think Denver probably wins it by a field goal, but that still means New England covers it. So in looking at this here, I just think New England's got enough to get by vis-a-vis the number and to keep it close. This does look like a whoever's got the ball last kind of a game. And again, Denver, and I haven't heard an explanation for this. I don't know if you have either, but after the way they destroyed New England when they played the regular season in the first half with the run, seemed to get away from it in the second half. And that was a game that I unfortunately was not able to catch that much as I wanted to. So they won't make that mistake again. I will say Jack Del Rio was the head coach for that game. John Fox was still on leave. So that's another thing that's different than the first time around. This is the first John Fox-Bill Belichick clash of the 2013-2014 season. I just keep coming back to that. I'm not going to bet against New England after I did last week. Again, none of my plays in the playoffs are lock picks or even quote-unquote big three picks, but as far as laying down a pick for the game, I'm going to go against you and take the Patriots and the points.
Okay, a couple things. I love how you referenced the rushing statistics. I think it's going to be even more pronounced in this game. You talked about Denver just ran over New England in that first game and then kind of got away from it, which I didn't understand why, like you mentioned. New England, the last couple games, it's been a totally different team with Blunt. I mean, and they're just running the ball. I think it's their two highest rushing totals ever with Brady the last two games, the regular season finale and then last week against the Colts, as far as attempts, not necessarily yardage. I want to talk about, and before I hit you with this trend, I think the running games wash out a little bit, but in the passing game, huge edge to Denver. Manning has a full complement of receivers to throw to. I don't think Julius Thomas was active in the regular season game, if I remember correctly. He will be here. Brady has nothing to throw to. I mean, this run-first mentality from the New England offense is out of necessity, not desire.
Right.
So
that's absolutely true.
Yeah. Here's a trend for you. And then my old buddy Mark Lawrence, actually, this one comes from him. So take that for what it's worth. But listen to this. Teams that scored 40 or more points the previous week in the playoffs, 4-22 against the number their next game.
Really?
And that's New England that qualifies. And that would lead me to my final point on this game, misleading results in both instances. I know New England got ahead on them pretty quickly. That interception was huge on the first drive that Luck threw. And, you know, it was 14-0 real quick. But the Colts battled back, and that was a 7-point game entering the fourth quarter, if you recall. Mm-hmm. I took the Colts and the points, and, I had them at 7.5, and I was technically covering going into the last quarter. Now it fell apart from there, and we kind of saw the high-variance Colts do what they do. But with Denver not covering, and I went against them too, and, you know, it was kind of a lucky win, like you alluded to earlier, they really kind of dominated that game more than the final score shows from what I mean, San Diego did nothing over the first three quarters. I mean, I was texting Buddy saying, what was I thinking? San Diego looks horrible. That this was dumb. Not only am I going to win straight up, they're not even going to cover. I'm an idiot. And then, you know, lo and behold, little Jim Morrison special backdoor man for you. But I just think last week's results completely misleading on both ends. And I just think the value is on Denver.
Interesting. Last point that I have on this actually backs up what you're saying a little bit more. We talk about the awesome, almost historic array of weapons that Denver has. We seriously will look back at this offensive array this year and regard it as one of the best of all time versus what the Patriots have here. The two leading targets for Brady, Edelman and Amendola, you talk about, as far as ability to stretch the field a little bit, Edelman, 10.1 yards per reception, Amendola, 11.7. And those are the guys that Brady goes to the most right now. They really do miss Gronk. I think they're going to be able to establish the run as they did last week, maybe throw Manning a little bit out of kilter, get a cover that way, maybe even a backdoor cover, so to speak, maybe cutting it from like 10 to 3. But,
yeah.
That could happen to Denver 2 weeks in a row. But Yeah, so you and I differ on that one. We go to the late one here, and this is going to be, again, just amazing, as we said. Also, 49ers at the Seahawks, 14-4 at 14-3 in terms of the records, and Fox, of course, with the A-team on this of Buck Aikman and the delicious Pam Oliver. And this is, again, as we said, best rivalry in the NFL right now, the one that I think is going to be the best over the course of the decade. Seattle's laying 3.5 here, up from 3 early on. You wouldn't have thought coming into the playoffs we'd be looking at a line that would be as tight as this, because essentially Seattle, you know, you take away the 3 points for home field, and the experts are basically pronouncing these teams even. I'll just give the statistical thing here before I turn it over to you. As far as yards rushing, the 49ers, an amazing 137.6 yards per game. Seahawks are very good at stopping at 101.6 yards. Seattle, very good themselves, 136.8 yards per game rushing. And the 49ers, even better at stopping at 95.9 yards per game given up. Again, the next numbers will reflect the fact that neither team puts much emphasis on the passing game. The 49ers, 186.2 yards per game passing, 172 yards per game given up by the Seahawks. Seahawks at 202.2. Yeah, that's a historic number as well. That is amazing. It's the exact inverse of what Denver did passing the football, which would make Denver Seattle such an amazing contrast. 202.3 yards per game, 221.0 given up by the 49ers. What I keep coming back to on one, you will have all bragging rights, notwithstanding anything else Platinum Smalls might say, if it were the Denver-Seattle Super Bowl. And I've been on your bandwagon most of the season, and I'm backing away from it. Like I said, I still think Denver is going to win by a field goal in the other game, but not cover. It's a little bit harder to split the difference here when the line's only 3.5. Technically, I could say Seahawks win by 3 if it don't cover, but realistically, I think whoever wins is going to cover in this game. And I'm back on the 49ers. They were my preseason pick to win the Super Bowl. I got away from them just because, again, of my tremendous respect for the Seahawks. I always thought the 49ers were right there. But this run that I've been on, and I know you've said that momentum is overrated and everything like that, it's been a heck of a run to end the regular season through the playoffs. But the biggest thing here, and the thing that I think has even been a counteract, the home field advantage, because you and I have agreed, we're both on record about this, it will not be a third straight blowout between these teams in Seattle. It will be a close competitive game, if for no other reason than the law of averages. These two teams are too good and evenly matched to have a third blowout. In a competitive game, what I keep coming back to is, you said the results from last week and the score is a little bit kind of misleading, but I will say, Russell Wilson continuing the recent pattern of not looking so great in the past. I mean, a lot of it's not his fault, frankly. I mean, Percy Harvin's been in and out, but they don't really have guys that can stretch the defense as much. Now that Michael Crabtree's back, Vernon Davis, Colin Kaepernick has much better weapons. In the end, the fact that the 49ers are more of a threat with the run and the pass, once again, give me the 3.5 points that I think I may not even need. I like the 49ers to win outright.
You had a lot of great points there, and I want to hit them one by one. First of all, a little off the wall here, you referenced the commentary team on this game. May I just say, I'm not going to be one of these guys like, I could do it so much better if you gave me a microphone. But I thought collectively, the quartet of Lynch, Deardorff, Sims, and Aikman last week was the worst color commentary on any given week in the history of the sport. I mean, those guys, I don't like really any of them, to be honest with you, on a week-by-week basis. But I thought they were all particularly awful last week. Just throwing that out there, really. I just thought they were all just horrible. They made the most generic points. Dan Deardorff's breakdown of that safety situation, I mean, my God. I mean, what was he smoking? I mean, what? You'd rather give him the ball on the 3-yard line? What are you talking about? But anyway,
yeah,
I digress.
He got called out for that, and justifiably so. I will just say this, that on the NFC Saturday game, we know it should have been Moose Johnston on the call, because it should have been four-time lounge guest Kenny Albert doing the play-by-play.
Yeah, that other guy, he didn't have, I didn't have much regard for him to play. I don't even remember what his name was, the play-by-play guy.
Kevin
Burkhart. He was just one of those guys who, okay, he just kept, like, looking at, like, in the pregame, he would look at John Lynch and then just smile at the camera, look, and they, God bless him, he's trying to earn a paycheck. But anyway, no one wants to hear about that. All right. I also am looking at this line similarly to you. Now, this is an interesting line, how it's going to break down, because it's three at some shots. Three and three. You can get the three. If you like Seattle, obviously, you've got to get the three here. Three and a half is an icky number to lay always.
If you like
and
your three,
think,
you can keep your three. Barack Obama.
Okay. There you go. Okay. 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 But here, I think it's going to drop to three at most places by kickoff. So if you're in a position where you don't have a three available yet, you may not, you don't have a, that one of the places you bet at doesn't have that, I'd still wait if you like Seattle, because I think this is going to go on a three. And that's interesting because, like you said, that means these teams are basically viewed as even by the odds makers. And I've had Seattle just a little bit better the majority of the year. Seattle has never really dropped out of the top two in my power rankings.
Right.
There was a time when the 49ers were probably as low as six, truth be told, five or six. Now, I had them number
three.
That's
exactly how I've been.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. I haven't had Seattle that low, and I haven't. And I had the 49ers as low as six. I'm the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they were kind of struggling mid-season, and, you know, Carolina. And probably it was probably right after Carolina had beat them in the regular season, to be honest with you, because the Saints were still at a high level. You know, the Patriots hadn't had all their injuries yet. So, I'm going to disagree with you here, too, because even if the odds makers do view this team as even, Seattle deserves more than the token three for home field advantage. They've lost once in 2 years here, and I know for some it's being cliched, and, you know, the Deadspin crowd probably rolls their eyes when they see, you know, the network bringing out the volume-o-meter or whatever the hell it is. And whatever, I guess, it, you know, I mean, look, okay, maybe your team should try to win a little bit more and they can have graphics about them too. Okay, Cleveland fan or whoever else is complaining about that. But I just think the home field advantage is actually being undersold in this game. And while I don't think it's going to be as severe as it's been the last 2 years, let's take a look at the four regular season meetings the last 2 years. Seattle's actually covered them all, barely covering both games in San Francisco. They've lost, I believe, by 7-2, and they covered by a half point both times, I think. So the games in San Francisco were both close. It was a 19. So, again, maybe the point spread does come into play here. Who knows? But it was 19-17 this year in San Francisco when the 49ers got their revenge. It was just a great game, just a great game. Now, the two games in Seattle, as you know, Rick Morris, have been decided by a total of 55 points.
Right.
I just think that as even as well as the 49ers are playing, they just have – it's one of those cases where, yeah, kind of like the Saints last week, they'll be better than the last time, but that's a big gap between last time and winning. And to be honest with you, Ricky, it's two factors. I told you off air that I'm kind of painting both these games with one broad stroke. Obviously, before the year, I picked Denver and Seattle to play in the Super Bowl. I've had them as the two best teams all year. I'm going to stick with it. That and the majority of bets, public money, the splits are kind of sharp. The sharps are rather split on these two games. But the majority of money is coming in on the underdogs like last week, people anticipating upsets. I don't think we get them. And I think the teams that have been the two best over the last year and a half meet the Super Bowl, like I said back in August. Give me Denver, Seattle. Give me that Seattle secondary against those Denver receivers. And give me Jason Jones crying the blues at the end of the game.
FBH senior editor Jay Jones certainly will be sad if the Broncos don't make it, as he is now a Colorado transplant. I will say this, and I floated this by you off air, that we had an almost historic level in the first 5 or 6 weeks. And granted, that was when you and I were at our lowest ebb in terms of the handicapping of unpredictability, the public getting slaughtered even worse than usual on stuff, and such that, again, I do weekly power rankings, and then I add them up, and I have AFC and NFC power rankings and by division. The AFC was actually way better than the NFC at that worst point in terms of flukiness. And by the end of the year, the NFC was much better as we figured it would be going into the season. So I wonder, because you and I are both big laws of averages guys, regression to the mean, progression to the mean. The rubber band always snaps back violently when it's pulled very far. We had such instability and unpredictability at the beginning of the year. It may just be the simple law of averages that the playoffs have been as predictable as they have been, which they haven't by and large. I said going in, you disagreed with me, but I said just pencil in Denver and New England now. Now, I realize, again, that is kind of a dumb public kind of thing to say, but that shows you how little regard I had for the other four teams in the AFC playoffs. Yeah. And frankly, I mean, I kind of think you see now, and as do most people, why I said that. The NFC, I wouldn't have sworn on a stack of Bibles it would be these two teams because, again, Carolina and New Orleans had a lot to say for themselves as well, and they both, you know, there were some weak spots in both of their performances last week also. They clearly were not the better teams. The best teams are these two, but they gave a pretty good accounting for themselves for being the inferior teams. But you look at this, the coaching rivalry as well here with Pete Carroll and Jim Harbaugh really kind of fueling it. That's something that's going to come into play here. Both of them very voluble type coaches. Very, very colorful. Pete Carroll will be playing off of the 12th man a lot on Sunday night. And again, they're mirror images in a lot of ways. And I can't disagree with anything that you said. I'm coming back more to the pure X's and O's part of this. Of we've been saying all season, Seattle that they can be an outlier to what the league is of the passing game, and that they can only, you know, if they only want to pass it this much, whatever. But I just wonder in recent weeks if we're not seeing teams make these kind of adjustments to them and get them in trouble for not having the consistent deep passing aspect of the game. San Francisco has it, Seattle doesn't, and that's what would trouble me if I was on Seattle. Seattle may very well be the better team overall, but that matchup and the fact that their passing game, Russell Wilson has a lot to prove on Sunday, and it's kind of unfair because it's not really his fault. He does not have weapons. But Colin Kaepernick has weapons, and that's why I like the 49ers.
He does, and it's interesting because, you know, I kind of talked about the advantages Peyton Manning has with his receiving core over Brady, and in this instance, over on the NFC side, Kaepernick clearly has the advantages over Wilson, yet I'm still starting with Russell Wilson, and that's because I just think Russell Wilson, you know, I don't have any fancy trend to back this up with. I just think Russell Wilson's going to play better this week. I don't know what was wrong last week. Something was, but that was as bad as he'd looked in really any game since the beginning of his rookie season. I just look for him to play much better. Colin Kaepernick is not exactly the most polished passer in this league either. And those receivers can be shut down by the Seattle secondary. I mean, look at Drew Brees, who is a polished passer. He did nothing for three quarters against that Seattle secondary. And his longest pass of the day was that fluky thing where the two guys, you know, each should have intercepted it. They ran into each other and it popped into Meacham's hands. I thought, much like on the AFC side, both results a little misleading. Not necessarily as much as the AFC side, but I thought Seattle, kind of like the top seed Denver over on AFC, on the AFC side, dominated for three quarters and kind of let the dog back in. Didn't, you know, have his foot on the gas necessarily in the second half. A lot of that was Wilson's fault. But New Orleans really had no business having a chance to even win that game. And then San Francisco, Carolina. Carolina, I think Ron Rivera went back to his old self in that he was too conservative. They had that really long drive in the third quarter that was like 8 minutes, and they wound up having to punt anyway because Newton took two sacks. Carolina ran eight plays inside the San Francisco 10, only came away with 3 points. So I thought that game should have been closer. I don't think the 49ers, while they looked great, you know,
I think
the game
you're right,
on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they really, you know, crushed the Panthers. I just think,
right.
you know, they kind of had some fortuitous defensive plays.
The sands are out of the hourglass, my friend. They've all run through. We'll see how everything transpires. We'll get together to do it again for the Super Bowl. Have a great time in Vegas.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN. Two, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.